So for those of the that missed this, because now we are actually recording, this is Intuitive Soul Radio. It was playing, they just wasn't recording.
Okay, that's all right.
So those that are listening will have heard this already, but I'm going to do it one more time. It's apparently one of those really strange days astrologically, and as we get to the weekend, it's going to get even stranger. It's a very hot day in here, and yes, we forgot to start the recording. So this is Travelers, Seekers, and Wandering Ways, and Tim is having a very good laugh here. So introduce to us Darren and what's going on.
Hi, everybody, and welcome again. Yes, we are going through a little bit here. We're listening to the lovely sounds of crystal quartz bowls. Being played by Darren Austin Hall of innertraditionshealing.com. Now, Darren is a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner, acupuncture, and also sound healing. And he does presentations every Thursday night, and we'll talk a little bit more about that with the quartz crystal bowls. And I was lucky enough to hear him a couple of weeks ago. So we're listening to the sounds of Darren playing his crystal quartz bowls. Right now we're listening to the heart bowl F. So we have been opening our hearts here with a very good laugh.
Yes.
So please let's just listen for a moment and open your heart to the sound and the healing energy of sound. I know it affects my heart because the tears start to well up in my eyes as they did the first time I heard you. I find it quite powerful, the bowls and the playing. And I have to say, when I heard Darren play for the first time, it was quite an incredible experience, because indeed it did very much open up the heart center and the group of us that were there to enjoy this very talented man play and vocalize as well. So we'll actually hear Darren vocalize a little bit later on in the show, which is just a treat, so please stay tuned for that. So welcome, Darren. Hello.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm honored to be here. Thank you for putting this together.
I think it's absolutely brilliant, and you know, in doing this show, what I've found really something is when I meet people, they inspire me. And those people who inspire me, I really want to connect and kind of talk to them about their journey. So how did you get started with, well, we'll start with the crystal bowls first, because that's what you were playing. So
right.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you got in that?
Yes, it was quite random, as it always is with those kind of groundbreaking destiny unfurling events in your life. I was studying Chinese medicine in Toronto at the Institute of Traditional Medicine, a great center and resource downtown. And I was about halfway through my studies, and I was quite frustrated with how material the healing traditions were being presented to us. There was a lot of emphasis on physiology, anatomy, and I knew that there was all this Taoist tradition that was much more mystical and metaphysical that I thought was very important that wasn't getting taught to us, and I didn't feel nourished. So I went to see this amazing astrologer in the city. Her name is Louisa Ormond, and she's also an Ayurvedic teacher, and she taught at our school. That's how I met her initially.
So Vedic astrology?
Actually, no, she does Western, interestingly enough.
Yeah, that is interesting.
She does mix a bit of Vedic in it, but mostly Western is her primary thing. And she's a real master teacher. And I went to see her for a session, and I expressed my frustration, since he said, well, you know, you're so creative, you're a musician, you're a writer, like you need to integrate that into the healing path that you're now setting upon. She said, what about sound healing? And I said, what's sound healing? She's like, well, go home tonight and Google it and see what happens. So I went home, I Google sound healing, and 7 hours later, and a few cups of coffee, I'm like, just in this amazing, just all these synapses are firing, all this creative energy, and I find I'm researching this passionate tradition of sound healing. It goes all the way back to the ancients, and it's just nourishing me on so many levels. So it was a great journey that began then. And 2 days later, very serendipitously, it was the winter solstice, and my friend invited me to some show that her friend's ex-boyfriend was doing, and it had something to do with, like, wine glasses and putting his fingers around them and making sounds. I said, okay, well, that sounds a little off the wall, but hey, why not? Let's go check it out. So we go to check it out, and that's, of course, when I met David Hickey,
right,
who is the pioneer. Yeah. And a shout out to him if he's listening. I usually try and shout out to him at all my shows because he's really pioneering this work for all of us. Mm-hmm. And so I went to see him, and it was just one of those, you know, all the dots were connected while he was performing with his bowls and his gongs and making all these sounds of the solar system. It was just, it was like listening to the Tao, like the ground of being, the mysterious ground of being that everything emerges from, and everything kind of connected that day. And I was like, I need to get some bowls. I need to do what he's doing. And it just sort of began from there. And things just happened, coincidences. I ended up getting my bowls a year later. And also on a side, I also found there's a way to combine Chinese medicine with sound healing using tuning forks applied to the acupuncture meridians and the acupuncture points. So I also do that in my practice. And that's been a whole other journey that involved some weird dreams I had in China when I was living there 4 years ago about gray-headed aliens and tuning forks and stuff, which at the time I didn't know what it meant, but years later I ordered these tuning forks. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I remember those guys, those little beings, they were doing that on me. So, and
they were doing it. So in the dream, they were actually doing it.
Yeah,
with the acupuncture.
When I was living in China, I was into a lot of astral traveling and a lot of crazy spiritual explorative stuff. Mm-hmm. And I had this one dream. It was very lucid, of just being in a room. There's this little gray headed alien with the big black eyes, and there was these tuning forks, these glimmering tuning forks in front of us, both of us between us, and it would pick one up and bang it and put it on my body, and I just felt ripples of energy. And it felt very synchronizing, like things were being harmonized. And I remember waking up, and I remember it was a lucid dream because I woke up and I was vibrating. And I felt that something had been shifted in me that to this day has been shifted from that event. Although at the time I was a little incredulous, I thought nothing of it. But years later, when I all of a sudden saw these tuning forks coming into my life, I just went like, that is, wow, what a weird coinkydink, or is it coinkydink at all? Who knows? It was a fascinating experience, that's for sure. So thanks to the grayheads.
There are no coincidences.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Although usually the grays are not considered ones that are here to help us, but sounds like in this case, maybe...
Hopefully there's some factions out there that are maybe helping.
There you go.
I think that's brilliant. I
mean, yeah, totally. And it sounds like it was a little bit more than just a dream.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And the lucid, and to have that physicality within that state itself, and to make that transition from dream state to waking state and carry that forward.
is quite incredible, and one of the yogas that I've looked at is the Tibetan yogas of dreams and sleep, and they talk about lucid dreaming. So you're in that area and very Taoist. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about Tao, and when you say the mysterious ground of being, because it sings to me, and it has a music. So I'm just wondering if you could give a little bit of that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's kind of the whole reason why I'm attracted to these bulls is that, I mean, music's been a part of my life ever since I was young, but I always had a problem with music being so linear. You know, I was always like, I have to compose a song and then it's like, it's done, it's frozen. Like, I can't add to it. I always felt more connected to improvisation. And when I started playing these bowls, I was listening, or I'm still listening to this great band from Iceland called Sigur Rós. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're literally like angels on this planet. And the lead singer sings in a language he's created called Hopelandic. Nice. And other times he does sing in Icelandic, but he just usually makes up gibberish. And when I started playing these droning sounds of the bowls, I started doing the same thing and sort of making these sounds with my voice, this vocal toning. And I think there's one crystal bowl healer who does the same thing, and she calls it the now language, because you're so in the now. And how that relates to the Tao is that in the ancient Chinese worldview, the Tao was kind of, I guess in Hindu mythology, it would be perhaps Brahman. Perhaps you can help me with that. But just the idea that there's a ground of all being and all form in the universe is one ground where it rises from. And this ground is totally eminent. It's everywhere, and it makes up the whole universe. And it's you can't conceive it with the mind. It's just this beyond infinite thing that's just always creating new forms.
Right. Okay.
And what I love about the bowls is that when I sing, I kind of feel like I'm engaging in that kind of idea, because I'm not using words so much. People often ask me, "Wow, what were those mantras you were singing?" I'm like, I don't know. They're just sounds. I mean, every now and again, I try and stick to sacred vowels or something like that, because I've heard they're healing.
Right, yes.
But when it gets down to it, I think when you're just expressing yourself in that improvised state, you're kind of embodying that mysterious, you know, feeling. Mm-hmm. And what's beautiful is that when people come and see the performances, they vibe with that and they get touched by that mystery. Mm-hmm. And it nurtures something deep inside them that our society really doesn't embody at all.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And quite the opposite, tries to cut us off from.
Well, you know, when you asked about like the Hinduism, and I think with Hinduism, they've sort of personified each of the gods and goddesses. I mean, in one sense, you could call that Shakti, which is, you know, that, and yet Shakti's that, the feminine goddess.
Right.
But, you know, I think these days, I mean, it would be more like calling it source, or if you were to think of Buddhism, it would be that, you know, that nothingness that's everything. So, you know, it does, it's very interesting, but it's
what I find fascinating, because it's the mysterious ground of being. And Laurie and I, in our last show, we were talking about some of the pitfalls along and enlightenment, and how sometimes we get caught up in what we term or judge or talk about as elevated vibrations. So working from the higher chakras or whatever. So we get very, it's no longer grounded. So this really kind of helps to balance that out. So I really kind of like that expression quite a bit. And when you're talking about, the language or the sounds that you made during the show, I thought it was absolutely phenomenal, because it was such a trip, and it was such an expression of that unique spirit coming through you. And hopefully we'll get to hear some of that a little bit later. So when you say music is very linear to you, how does the bowls create something that's non-linear?
Well, it's more that the bowls give me a forum to sing my gibberish. The bowls themselves are actually quite linear, because they all follow the notes of the scale. And the idea is, when you hear these bowls, because they make such pure sine, what's known as sine waves, like they're very like pure tones that don't really waver too much. Although when you hear them, you might hear these reverberations, sounds like it's waving, but it's a very pure, straight, strong tone.
Mm-hmm.
It really restores harmony within our being, within our bodies. Because we just hear so many dissonant sounds all day, so much music is done without a consciousness of that. You know, there's often way too many sounds. It's way too complicated. So with these bowls, it's just going back, simply listening to the tones. And it's funny because when I was a child, I had a lot of weird, I'm sure we all had very eccentric things going on when we were children before we were told not to do things. And one thing I used to love doing is I used to play the piano that we had. We had this beautiful old piano. And I took lessons and stuff, but I could never get beyond like the first grade in piano because I just got so fed up with learning like all these linear rational ways.
Yeah,
but exactly, my natural kind of proclivity was to sit with this piano and just, I remember being like 6 years old and just making ambient soundscapes with the notes and with the reverb pedal.
Right, yeah.
And just kind of doing that. And it was just this beautiful kind of opening experience.
It becomes, it's very interesting you say that, and I laugh at it because I'm quite familiar with the, with how that works, because when I was doing piano lessons as well, I found it quite strange that I had to learn certain things in a certain way in order to play a piece of music that, well, and that's pretty much carried throughout my entire life, so.
You and a bunch of us, I know. What do you mean it has to be this way? What are you talking about?
You know, if we hadn't have done it in like a zillion other lifetimes, it probably, you know, it probably at one point made sense. But
yes.
You know, seriously, we got a what? Why? No. Yeah. No.
And that's what I enjoyed about your work was how intuitive and how free it was.
Mm.
Because we get, you know, and like you say, sometimes we get caught up, or we can get caught up within the departments or little compartments that society tries to put us in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you talk about the healing of sound, can you give us a little bit more about that and how you think about how that sound heals in that way?
Wow, yeah, that's epic. Where to go with that? I mean, sound can heal in so many ways. I mean, just a simple thing I often tell people is whenever you're depressed, the best antidepressant in the world is just singing. You know, even if it's a simple little nursery rhyme, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, in the morning, singing the scales such as that can just energize you. Because when we're making sounds, we're actually like 70 to 87% water. I think that's kind of what the scientists say now.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And water like carries sound, I think 10 times faster than earth or ground. Right. So when we're making sounds with our voice, you know, our whole body is vibrating to those sounds. And daily I tone what are known some sacred tones for the chakra system, which are the energetic system of the ancient Hindus. And after I finish those seven vowel tones, they're vowel tones, I mean, I'm just so filled with energy. And so it definitely vitalizes me.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can take it into so many different forms. I mean, the indigenous used to use sound in a lot of their ceremonies to call on spirits. So it can be a sort of way to call on those benevolent guides into our lives in any given moment. Usually I begin my shows with an invocation for those spirits, for those guides to come and be with us during this session. And then it can get really kind of, I mean, I like to do jamming sessions with people where we just make songs together. And in those sessions, when you really just surrender to what the Druids would call the Awen, which is that, all that, what the muses are, all that kind of just music pouring from the source, it can take you to realms and states of mind that are just incredible. And there, a lot of emotions can get released. Sometimes when I sing, great emotions of anger or sadness or great joy all of a sudden come out, and I feel very cleansed afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many ways to use sound in a healing way.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, if we look at the Bible, you know, first there was the Word, which is sound.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. So everything starts from there, and if we look at matter,
Hinduism, Om. created the universe.
Yeah, and that one sound. So that sound comes from the movement, and from movement within space itself is where we initiate that sound. And if we're matter, we all have our own unique vibration or frequency. So it's really interesting that we can play within that and have these wonderful tools that can assist us on this journey. So now, as a musician, as a child, how has that influenced how you play now? Do you find you're recapturing some of that?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. When I was a child, I always used to hear music. Like, I would often walk around in this hazy state. Maybe it was also the white sugar that my mom was feeding me. Unfortunately, she was ignorant to that for a while. I used to walk around in this literal ocean of sound all the time. I'd hear symphonies. I'd hear massive orchestras all the time. And as a child, the only way I would be able to go to sleep is actually banging my head against my pillow like a drum and singing sounds. So it kind of sounded like... But I would sing for some nights 2 hours, and I would be in throes of ecstasy when I was singing, because
that would help me sleep.
Oh, and then I'd just pass out. And my parents, you know, were just like, "What is going on? This is..." But you know, they tell me to stop, but it would be so automatic. I'd be like, "Yeah, no problem," and then I just go into it. It was like a trance. And then I went away to go-away camp, and I think that's when it was like the ostracism started, because you're all of a sudden in a cabin with eight other, you know, boys, and like, oh boy, now you look like you sound like a freak. So I stopped, you know, I buried that. But it was funny, anytime that I would get the flu or I'd get really sick, I'd always do that, even in my 20s at university or something. So it was like this instinctual, like, this is good for me to do. And it would make me feel better. And then when I started playing music, I play guitar and writing songs. And now with the Bulls, all of that is coming back. And as you say, when you saw me, that intuitiveness seems very natural to me. Yeah, totally. It's totally, that's like the most original form of expression for me, just making these sounds. So I feel so blessed to have these in my life, because it gives me the opportunity to reconnect and rekindle that joy that I really had as a child. And now the fact that I'm presenting it to people and people getting really moved by it. And like, now it's like, okay, the spirit's like, okay, now you've finally woken up that this is useful. And now I feel like it's really going. Like, I did a show last night for a friend's fundraiser, and I just brought the harp bowl and I sang. And I never sang like that before. And I felt like I was saying things with the vibrations to people. And people came up to me afterwards and were like, "What was that? That was amazing. It sounded like just like this amazing, almost indigenous sacred ceremony, you know?" And I was just like, wow. And I'm just honored that whatever's coming through me is good, and it's beautiful, and it's touching people.
I find that quite fascinating. And you said you buried a lot of this. During that period where you were burying it, and I'll touch on this, did you notice a change in your physical self?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's when I hit my teenage years. And so immediately I was like, cigarettes flew into my life, you know, and marijuana and experimenting with all sorts of drugs. And it was a very abusive time, you know, as much of a lot of teenage years without any kind of initiation processes. So I definitely noticed I wasn't strong anymore. I wasn't plugged into any joy, you know, as I was back then. And I got, you know, fairly depressed at moments and stuff like that. And now that I'm back to making those sounds, huge difference, like huge difference in my life.
I think, though, that's what everybody, I mean, it's almost like we have to unplug in our teen years, or else we wouldn't, it is that initiation period that we just wouldn't be able to handle all the hormonal, and I mean, we have to like almost completely unplug from our intuition and our heart, and just to the smoking and stuff was a way to ground ourselves in a different way, so that we weren't we weren't really as present. You know, otherwise it's just, I think it's too much. I think almost every single person I know that is on this path has also done the same in their teenage years. It's just
totally. Yeah.
I think I was a little bit late.
Were you? Yes.
Mine finally ended when I was 40.
Oh, you mean you kept with it? Is that what you're saying? Or
well, no, because at one point I was dancing, so that was kind of my entire life, and that was how, you know, it was Happy Feet. You know, I'm Mumbles. You know? So that was kind of my thing up until, you know, I was in my late 20s. So it was after that that, you know, I disconnected from any kind of expression in that way. So at least I had somewhat of a balance there for a while. But then all of that just disappeared. And then I just, the burying is something that was quite something. So similar paths, and I think all of us, was quite interesting.
Yeah, I think it's traumatizing for teenagers when you, because it's when your consciousness really starts to be solidified in an individual self, and you wake up and realize you're in this matrix, you know, this machine that is doing everything it can to force you into bearing the original beauty that you have to offer to the world. And when I say initiation, you know, in the indigenous societies, I've done a lot of work with their healers and their teachers, and they have these very powerful rites of initiations to make their young people realize, okay, childhood's over. This is how important your life is now. You have a responsibility to your community. There's a thing called death that's going to come at some point, so we're going to put you on a vision quest and get you in touch with that. And we don't have that. And you're right. We have to go into, you know, different ways because we have an instinctual drive for that. So the drugs and the tobacco and stuff like that, even though it can be abusive and distorted on a level, I think it's that expression of wanting to expand and get in touch with something sacred that's coming out and unfortunately not finding the appropriate expression maybe in the world.
And at least with indigenous cultures, they actually use not necessarily the man-made psychedelics, but they use the natural ones as part of the spiritual journey, as part of that connection, which is something that we've disconnected to in Western culture, is having that ability and the support to do it within the framework of something that is important in your life.
Yeah, but there is new, there is new, some new studies coming out that are actually exploring that as a way to assist people to make that connection. So it is coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a natural, they're doing it, it's a natural way, and it, they're looking at it because they want to see, you know, what was going on in the 70s and the 60s and the 70s that, you know, promoted this, and maybe what was going on then wasn't as healthy, and maybe if we can do it in a way that is healthy. That and so there are studies now that are happening that
and is there,
you know,
a way to
is
there a way to do it healthily? Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
You know, we've got a history of it. You know, there's a history of all of these cultures that use this, that have done this, and have done it very, very well.
And usually with sacredness.
Exactly.
I mean that's the point, is that it has to have.
You know, in my experience, I've seen people who, you know, their hearts have opened, and they've become different people on that journey.
Well, they get a taste of the expansiveness that's possible, and where they may not have been able to do it on their own journey by themselves or in their own meditation without, you know, some sort of without a tool. Yeah,
yeah. And what we have with the bowls and what you're doing, and I'm wondering. So you talk about your music as a child. And really great stories. But you were studying traditional Chinese medicine at the time before you got into this. So how did you get into Chinese medicine? How was that path?
Again, kind of random. I lived in China for 3 years as an English teacher. And I was studying Kung Fu and Qigong while I was there as well. But never had an inkling to study medicine. Even just before I left, actually, I had many friends who were foreigners who were studying Chinese medicine there. And one of my friends from Ireland gave me the Huangdi Neijing, which is the Yellow Emperor's classic on Chinese medicine, which is the book that everyone has to read when they're studying the medicine. He actually gave that to me before he left. And when I left, I actually hoofed it. I was like, I'm not going to need this. So I left it behind and gave it to someone. And then 6 months later, I'm back in Toronto, and all of a sudden I'm back into this like stressful world of like, oh right, I don't make as much money as I did in China, and like dealing with all the, you know, we all know the stresses that we have here, and living as an expat in other countries can be a great life. Trust me, it's a great awesome. Life. Yeah. So when I came back, I was really stressed out, and I had actually decided I wanted to do my master's program or my MA and then do a PhD. I wanted to become a professor. That was my whole thing. So I was looking at all these cool things with goddess spirituality and mysticism. I was very into spirituality, so I wanted to do something like that. And I don't know, I couldn't find anything that sort of really gripped me. And I was talking to one of my old professors who I had a really great connection with, and he finally said to me one day, very frankly, he's like, you know, Darren, your mind's just too expansive. You're too into too many things. You know, you're too Gemini. It's like, uh-huh, well, I know that. And he's like, you're going to find the further you go along in academia, you have to become more and more and more specialized, and it's going to kill you. It's going to drive you nuts. If I were you, look into something else. And at the time, I was reading a few books on the Qigong that I'd been studying in China, giving theory to what I was just doing with my body there, because I didn't really have much theory when I was doing it. And I was reading this man, Ken Cohen's book called The Art of Qigong. And he also wrote a book on Native American healing. He's a Native American healer as well. Remarkable individual. I just met him recently. It's very cool. And those two books kind of tapped into something, because it really showed me that, hey, spirituality and alternative healing and traditional medicine are, you know, very blended. There's not much of a separation towards them. I thought, this is interesting. So I looked up a few schools in Toronto, and I found this amazing place called the Institute of Traditional Medicine. Their website blew me away. And they, on their website at least, it looked like they had courses in Ayurveda and indigenous healing and all this stuff and Chinese medicine, but it didn't make it look like Chinese medicine was the big thing. Right. So I went, I met with the director, Mona, who's amazing. We hit it off. I enrolled kind of just like on the flying by the seat of my pants. And then I got my first schedule, and I see all these Chinese medicine courses. I'm like, huh, this must be the Chinese medicine semester or something, you know? I don't know what's going on here. And all of a sudden I'm thrown in, and like I'm in my first student clinic, and it's all acupuncture and Chinese medicine. Wait a second. All those little courses I thought were actually offered, maybe they're just little electives added on to the Chinese medicine compendium, which it was. And so I kind of kicked and screamed for the first year, because I was like, what have I done? Do I really want to study this? And fortunately enough, there were some teachers who came in who did finally nourish me with that mystical, metaphysical side of the medicine that I pointed to earlier. And when I finally started tapping in with that, it all made sense. And I'm very grateful for studying this amazing medicine, because it's really miraculous.
So do you find that gives you a base from which to work? So the mysterious ground of being. So it kind of gives you that ground from which everything else can kind of
for sure, because I mean, the rigors of my studying definitely taught me, you know, how much expertise does go into medicine on a level. There's always the intuitive stuff, which is important, but there's a lot of theory that there's definitely a road to mastery that requires a lot of diligence and a lot of hard work. And just seeing the complexity and the intricacies of the evolution of this medicine and their anatomy of the energetic body of the human being, I mean, it just made me like blown away. And also just being in touch with other practitioners and seeing how devoted they were to their patients and how pragmatic they had to live their lives to always be vital for their servitude that they give to others. Because if you don't take care of your vessel, how are you going to take care of others?
Right.
So all of that kind of, that one especially, actually, all of that kind of stuff really helped me, you know, for all the stuff that I do now to express it. Right. Because these are very sacred bulls, and at the beginning, I don't think I knew that. I was kind of like, oh, these are cool, you know, stuff like that. But now I've been studying with a few healers who use them, and it's like, well, quartz crystal comes from deep in the earth. It's quartz crystals have been used in a lot of indigenous ceremonies for millennia. These things are super sacred. So when you play them, you have to treat them like that. And in the healing ceremonies, a lot of the healers that I've been working with, they say, you're the main healing force, whatever energy you're allowing yourself to be a conduit for. So you need to do a lot of work on yourself. The bulls, they're beautiful. They make great tones, but they're secondary because your energy is going to be going through them, or whatever energy you're pushing or pulling through you that's expressing through the bulls.
Right. So, this quartz is a natural conductor of energy.
Exactly.
An amplifier of energy as well. So when we have that state and working within that, then anything that is coming from underneath, from that mysterious ground of being. I'm going
to fret. We're going to have to get you to make a word for it by the end of this. Keep on referring to it. It's too long a phrase.
I don't mind it. I'm good with long phrases.
Okay.
Poor Lori, trying to introduce the show every month. Damn.
Can we shorten this a little bit?
Ah, that full moon.
Now, okay, so I want to know, do you have the herbs and make the teas, and is that how you work with the healing?
I actually didn't study the herbs. That's something that I eventually want to get into.
Really?
But my partner has, and she's amazing at it. And so we always have herbs brewing in our kitchen,
right.
And I'm constantly taking them, and they're amazing. That's something that I need to get into, because I'm so resonant with the indigenous way.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a week in Findhorn, actually, in Scotland.
Neat.
And that place just showed me, like, plants are the devas, the angels on this planet. And we really need to bring them back into our worldview, because mm-hmm. they can help save us from a lot of our own madness.
Well, it's
Tim knows what we're talking about.
Yes, yeah. I've had my own experience and
okay.
some of the things that I've used for my body, herb-wise, on an intuitive level, I'm alive.
Wow.
That's what I can say. I'm alive.
You're from New Fernando.
Yes. I am. So when you said Scotland, yeah. As a matter of fact, I was in Scotland with friends, and just
did
outside.
Did you go to Findhorn?
Yeah, we didn't know.
Oh, okay.
I was just outside of Edinburgh and went up into Arena, so the northern Scotland. But we were there, and we were going through the hills and walking with the dogs, and I'm in the ground going, okay, you can eat this plant, and you can eat this. And they're like, how do you know? Because when I was home and I was growing up in Newfoundland, this is some of the stuff that we were taught. You know, this is a we called it a sour duck. And it has a little green leaf, and you can eat it. And it's just, you know, it's sour, and, you know, it's kind of tastes like a Granny Smith apple kind of thing, but it's just a leaf. So there's all of these things, so I find it quite fascinating.
You know. Now, are you, I find it interesting, because I think, you know, a lot of people have their own ideas, but one of the thoughts that keeps coming up is that, you know, if we are from Ontario, or that we should be using our indigenous herbs and our indigenous plants, even though we don't probably have enough, because they're all being, you know, gotten rid of, but that, you know, like, it's best, you know, to eat the fruit and vegetables that are grown in Ontario versus getting the ones from California.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes me, because I have gone to a traditional Chinese medical doctor and have done the herbs and the teas, and God, they're awful, but...
Oh, yes, they don't taste too nice, that's for sure.
No, they do not. But, you know, like, I wonder if really they're the best for us, or, you know, is it because we resonate with that person and that's why we're there? Like, it's a very interesting...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a debate that is mm-hmm. ongoing mm-hmm. in the Chinese medicine community. My partner and I have butted heads on it many times. One of the teachers that I work with, Lonnie Jarrett, his teacher, one of his teachers, J.R. Worsley, who is known as the founder of Five Element Acupuncture, he was quoted as saying that local herbs aren't just like 10 times more powerful than Chinese-grown herbs and grown in China, not just 100 times more powerful, but 1,000 times more powerful.
Wow.
So he was really emphatic about local herbs are the best, because your body's grown up in that climate.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the best, if you're going to use herbs, the best way would be to grow them yourselves.
Sure.
And there's lots of different techniques. I don't know if anyone's aware of the Anastasia series, these books from Russia.
Yeah.
She talks a lot about, like, putting seeds in your mouth for like 3 minutes so they can read what, you know, vitamins or minerals they need to, you know, make from their photosynthesis for you. And then you plant the seed like
cool.
that. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Oh, yeah.
And so she gives all these little pragmatic... Oh, you should read her books. They're amazing. She gives all these little pragmatic tips, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I use the Chinese herbs as well, just because it's more... But it's more, for me, it's more interesting, just because I'm trying to see if it matches with the theory that I've been studying. Mm-hmm. But I think if I eventually get into herbology, I'd like to get more into the Western herbs, I think. unless we can figure out a way how to grow the Chinese herbs here. Mm-hmm. And I should say that a lot of the Chinese herbs are actually stuff that you can grow here.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
They're just given Chinese names.
Names. Think, yeah.
You know, are weird. Yes, but, yeah. Yeah.
Or Latin names.
Or Latin names. Yeah. Yeah.
Which.
Yeah.
But and it's interesting because if we talk about that as well, then we also touch on what our heritage is. Mm. You know, because our own heritage. And again, from my own experience, I have Aboriginal heritage, Canadian Aboriginal heritage. So in going through my spiritual path and thinking, well, I'm supposed to be vegetarian or vegan, did not work for me at all. Mm. But what I found is that the berries and the fruits and the wild game, those things, I'm like major energetic. So it's looking at those things as well. So when we look at those energies, and we'll bring it back again to the music, and how we can, is there a way that the music can kind of bring that or show us that path in some way? Do you think that there's...
The path of energy?
Yeah, exactly. To bring that out. Because if it's energetic... Mm-hmm. What we're eating is energy, and the herbs are energy. Mm-hmm. Do you think the music would have the same, can have the same effect?
Oh, absolutely. And the beautiful thing about music and sound is that it's so close to the source because it's just vibration. And I think when you engage people with sound as a healing tool, people get really blown away at how simple it is. And I think some people get kind of put off by it because of that, because we've grown up in a society that really honors complexity and stuff that's very esoteric and stuff. But when it comes down to it, the fact that you can make a bunch of sounds and actually like tremendously vitalize your body is quite amazing. I mean, when you're dealing with chronic illness, that's a different story. Mm-hmm. But often chronic illness is going to take, the person has to do some profound changes in their life. And sound can definitely guide them and be a part of vitalizing them, so they're always encouraged to do those changes. Sound is like, I mean, sound is energy. It's one of the most barest forces of energy I think we have at our disposal. And that's why I think it's so amazing, because anyone can do it. I don't care who you are. If you have a voice, you're a sound healer. You know, you don't have a choice when you come to the sessions, because it's like, let's all make music, and no one can sit aside, because it's like, if you have a voice, you can do it, and don't be shy. Why would you deny yourself all that amazing feeling that can come out of it?
Well, as a musician and as a sound healer, would you find that people who have more tension, both in their voice or more fear, does that hold them back? Do you find that holds them back from being able to connect to that?
Absolutely, yeah. I often, when you start doing, like, for instance, the chakra toning exercises on your own, you're opening a very intimate relationship with your voice. And I'm amazed how I can really observe the tensions as I move up my register, up the scale and stuff like that, or different. I'll be toning, you know, for the G, for the throat. The note G and the sound ah, and I'll notice right away, whoa, it's a lot tighter than the other ones, you know. So it's very, I can observe quite a lot there. And I've noticed in my own journey, because in the last three, four years I've been studying healing. I mean, anyone who studies healing, you're going to go through a lot of healing, because it starts with you healing yourself, and it's crazy. So I've done a tremendous amount of healing in the last 4 years, and my voice has gotten, in parallel, much more freer, stronger, but freer is definitely the key. I used to perform live and be so wary of like, oh, I don't want to hit that high register because I can't hit it so well. Now when I play, I am so crazy and exuberant. I mean, people love jamming with me because I go anywhere and you know, I'm fearless. And it's amazing now, because when I go into those places with a voice, it just feels so good. And it's just like, oh, I've got to really encourage people to be this crazy as well, this wild. It's really amazing.
Because you do have quite a vocal range from when I was listening to your show.
And I think anyone does. I think you just got to start tapping it. Because I used to not have that range.
Oh, exactly.
But the more, yeah, it's your voice is actually a barometer, I think, for your spiritual liberation. On a way, I mean, there's many barometers, but that's one of the barometers for me that I've been able to see for sure.
Yeah. And it's quite incredible. I've been doing voice lessons for the past year and a half, and it's really interesting because, like you, I never thought I had any upper register whatsoever, and now I'm going, oh. All right. So it's really quite fascinating. And it's funny because people come into our lives. And at the beginning, you said, you know, we were talking, you know, there's no, what was the word we used?
The coinkydink.
Coinkydink. Yes, that's it. No coinkydink. And it's really.
Right.
That's it. There we go. Thank you.
Lori didn't use that, but yes.
Yeah. So, somebody with a memory. Thank God.
It's barely there.
I can't remember what I did 5 minutes ago. please play some music.
We're almost at that point, actually.
So really quite phenomenal in being able to hear that and to experience that. Mm-hmm. Because I can tell, you know, the deep register is always there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think as men... we get caught up in, well, we have to have a deep voice.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and when you start working in the high register, like when I started first working with it, it was challenging because your conditioning pops up. This is feminine. This is, I feel vulnerable. I feel like submissive with this high voice. This is going to ruin my masculinity or something, you know. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I have a very liberal family, so I didn't really have those problems too much, but it would come up. It would still come up just because it's like that mechanistic conditioning that's in us, in us all, that we have to transcend.
Right.
But for men, I think it's great because when the more time you spend in those upper registers, it's one of the most joyful places to be. And again, it really shifts you a lot when you can sing in those registers.
Yeah. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. And so how has that, so in opening that up, how has that impacted your work in that way?
Which?
Or has it, being able to open up those registers to move past those kind of social paradigms?
I don't know if I can answer that yet. I think it's ongoing. I'm still so early in my time with sound. It's only been about, I'd say, the last 2 years I've been really rigorously working with sound. So I don't really know yet, but... Okay. I just know that I have much more joy and peace and also purpose and like fury in my life working with sound. Because especially when you really, you know, when I play the bowl on my own in my room and I know no one's home and I can just let it fly, I can let all this fury out, like deep ancient pain, you know, can come out. And it's the sounds that come out like shock me. Mm-hmm. They shock me. In a good way, though. And I feel like almost like there's 1,000 ancestors standing beside me who are all just like, you are going to change the world. Like, that's what we all need to feel. You know, we need to feel that empowered to stand in that power. And sound can totally help you embody that energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, I think it's time we hear some of that.
Okay. Awesome.
Yay. Okay.
Take it
so
away.
I'll just tip this mic.
There we go. And again, we're listening. We're going to be listening to Darren Austin Hall, Sound Healing Energy. And Darren's at innertraditionshealing.com. And he's going to play the Quartz Crystal Bowls for us. So sit back.
And some voice, I believe.
And some voice, too, yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Bring it on. We had the wonderful, wonderful Darren Hall from innertraditionshealing.com. So now, Darren, every Thursday?
Every Thursday, I accompany an amazing yoga class at Cooley Yoga in the Annex. It's at Bloor and Brunswick from 6:30 to 7:30. It's taught by the amazing Josie Hoped. And Josie Hoped is an amazing teacher, and we focus on working with the chakras. So it's a great class for anyone who wants to go a little deeper into the yoga theory, but also with amazing asana practice. Mm-hmm.
So that's Thursday evenings, Bloor and Brunswick?
Bloor and Brunswick, yeah, okay. Right behind Futures Bakery.
Okay, and they can find that on your website as well?
They can find it on my website, okay. Yes.
And your website is innertraditionshealing.com?
That's it.
Okay, and what else do you have coming up there?
Tomorrow, on Friday, I will be doing a show at 889 Young Yoga Studio in Rosedale. It's part of their Pranification Fridays events. From 7 to 8:30, I'll be doing a sound healing session with the Bulls. Mm-hmm. And also on July 11th will be my next Shen performance. Sound Healing Energy Shen is kind of the group that I do with a friend as well, Jason Tarter. Mm-hmm. Shen is also an ancient name for consciousness in Chinese. But the next event, the Shen event I'll be doing with the nine bulls that I have will be on July 11th. And I'm really excited about that because it's a total solar eclipse. And I seem to just be making all these events on crazy astrological dates. The last one was a new moon. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow's the full moon, and the next one will be on a total solar eclipse. So I'm excited, because to actually come and immerse yourself with the quartz healing power of these bowls on a day like that, mm-hmm. it's extraordinary.
So where is that on July 11th?
That will be at 401 Richmond,
okay,
at the corner of Richmond and Spadina, at the Xing Ling Chinese Medicine School, Suite 384, the same one as the show that you were at.
Yeah.
And that'll be 7 till 8, 9. And that's on my website as well, under the events.
Okay. So your events, you have your events listing. Mm-hmm. And what else, Darren? Because you not only do the bowls, you...
Well, I do. I have my own private healing practice. I work out of Kokoro Dojo, which is near Bathurst and DuPont. And all my information is listed on the website. And I also treat at a space at the school, which I graduated from, which is near Queen and Spadina. And I call myself an integrated health practitioner, because it's a professional way of pretty much saying I use Chinese medicine as the central axis. And then I bring in sound healing. I work with nutrition. I work with meditation. I work on all these different levels. But mostly a treatment with me comprises of a lot of inspirational, purpose-driven advice and guidance, mm-hmm. followed by an acupuncture treatment using the five-element ancient model, and usually with the bowls, if I have some with me, and some tuning forks. So I kind of immerse all those layers in my treatments.
Oh, and that's one thing we never got to talk about yet either, was the tuning forks.
I guess you have to have me again.
Exactly. Exactly. Good.
I'd love to come back. It's been so fun talking to you guys. Very kindred feeling.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Very nice. So, that's about it. So again, it's innertraditionshealing.com. So you can find the events. You can check out Darren's private practice. And please do check out some of his events. From my own experience, I can say phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. So thanks again for joining us.
Do we know who our next guest is?
We do.
Okay.
We have another musician actually joining us next month, Nicolette Lagasse from Pembroke, Ottawa. And she's just releasing her first album.
Nice.
So looking forward to talking to her. She's a friend of my family. So ended up being connected that way. So Nicole Lagasse and Jason Tarter will be on in September.
Oh,
and we have a voice coach, vocal coach, and performer, Beth Ann Cole, joining us in August. So I actually know what's going on for the next couple of months.
Wow, when does that happen?
Last week. It was the sound that got everything going.
Awesome.
Excellent. Well, awesome. It was the primary creator of the universe. So.
Well, there you go.
Tends to get things going.
There we go. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Darren.
Oh, thank you.
For being really fun.
Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.